Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Happy Friday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You know my guest. She's the great Carmen Vitale. Carmen, I am always excited to talk to you, but I'm even more excited to talk to you today. I think this is going to be a really fun episode. Of course, you can find her on Twitter at Carmi V. Carmen, how are you doing?
I'm good. This is going to be fun. It's a good distraction.
I think so too. I think we've got a fun NFC North superlatives coming up, or awards, I guess is a better way to put it, which I'm looking forward to. We'll go over week 9, we'll go over week 10. And then I think we'll start off though with a pretty fun trade deadline, I think, overall. Obviously Washington gets Marshon Lattimore is kind of the big one, but just kind of sticking in the NFC North, all four of the teams made some sort of deal over the last couple of weeks. Of course, we already talked about Cam Robinson going to the Vikings, but on deadline day, we started with Za'Darius Smith going from the Browns. There it is.
Yeah,
it was in there.
Somewhere. I know.
From the Browns to the Lions. And this was an often talked about trade. It finally got done, and he should be a potential impact player for this Lions team moving forward.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see exactly how the Lions handle now having Za'Darius Smith. Obviously, still no one compares to or can fill the shoes of Aiden Hutchinson, who I believe still leads the league in pressures, by the way, having not played in weeks.
Crazy.
But what you did see Detroit do after Aiden Hutchinson went down was they started to blitz a lot more. And that's something where with Aaron Glenn, when you have a really good pass rusher like you do Aiden Hutchinson, you try to get pressure with four, and you're often very successful in doing so. And kind of the entire defensive line is built around getting Aiden Hutchinson those one-on-one matchups that he can then capitalize on. So in his absence now, you've had a lot more guys kind of more involved. I think Aleem McNeil and DJ Reader are the guys that are just the unsung heroes of this defensive line, eating up blockers and still maintaining, you know, some of these better matchups for guys that are coming in from the second level, the third level, wherever it is on the defense. And they've been bringing more pressure as in, you know, 5 or 6 man rushes more since Aiden Hutchinson went down. Now that you have Za'Darius Smith, do you isolate him in the way that you were trying to isolate matchups for Aiden Hutchinson and kind of do a one-for-one there and then still try to get pressure with four and pull back on the blitz? Or do you continue doing it now the same way you've been doing it, knowing that Za'Darius Smith is a good pass rusher but probably isn't Aiden Hutchinson level?
Right.
Do you continue to do what you've been doing but just add Za'Darius Smith to that mix and include him in all of these blitz packages? I'm going to be very interested to see how that goes for them.
As Packer fans know, you can line him up everywhere. You can line him up over center, defensive end, defensive tackle. You can put him anywhere, especially from a pass rush standpoint. He's going to find ways to get to the quarterback. In addition, Za'Darius Smith has shown to be fantastic in small doses. Like Green Bay, his first year was phenomenal. The second year was good, and then it kind of tapered off after that. Minnesota, his first year was fantastic. He was really good in Cleveland last year. In small doses, if you get that first year boost from Za'Darius Smith, it usually goes very well. So Detroit's in a great situation where they get him in that small dose. You bring him in, he usually gets super energized, plays really well, and that's all really Detroit needs him for is the remainder of the season, just half a year. And if he can give that to Detroit, it's going to boost him, it's going to boost them, and I think this actually could be a very strong match for the Lions.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's going to be, I mean, they haven't rested on the fact that they look like a pure juggernaut. And even though they've had a lot of success still defensively, I love this addition. And I think you're right, as a rotational player, as in small doses for the next half of the season, I mean, the locker room and the culture in Detroit is so incredibly wonderful. So I can't imagine that it's hard to assimilate into something like that. And now, you know, he's just collecting all of the NFC North teams. So
I was going to say, you beat me to it. I was going to say, then he can sign with the Bears in free agency in
2025. Right. Gotta catch them all, right? He's just like an NFL Pokemon.
Exactly. Very much. It feels that way. NFC North Pokemon, at least. All right, let's go to the Bears. A lesser trade. Khalil Herbert was not really a huge part of that rotation. They signed Swift. Roshan Johnson's become more involved. I never quite understood why they didn't use Khalil Herbert a little bit more. I really liked him every time he got in the game. He seemed to do something well, but they decided to move off of him. Cincinnati picks him up. I think that's a nice addition for the Bengals. Thoughts on that trade?
Yeah, I mean, getting anything for Khalil Herbert when he had been a healthy scratch for multiple weeks, I think was a win for the Chicago Bears. And you're right. Once DeAndre Swift kind of came in, him and Khalil Herbert just kind of have similar skill sets. And the Bears just felt that DeAndre Swift was the guy that could do it better. So yeah. It was him and then Roshon Johnson as kind of the change-up, third down, short yardage back. And that really left Khalil Herbert as the odd man out. So to be able to get anything in return for a guy that hadn't really played, and then even when he was like when he was on the field and then was a healthy scratch for a lot of the season, I think was a win for the Bears. It's not sexy, but it's a good one.
Yeah, I think so too. It's kind of similar to the trade we'll talk about in just a second. But, you know, you had a player that wasn't playing, you got value on it. You were able to pick up a future draft pick that they'll be able to utilize next year and you get what you can out of it. But when you have a player that's, again, not playing at all, regardless of his talent level, you pick something up in return, it makes sense. And then last but not least, of course, we had Preston Smith headed to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a seventh round pick. We learned later in the week that Preston had requested a trade a couple weeks ago. Green Bay grants it, sends him to a 3-4 defense, which he seems a better fit for. And they only get a seventh round pick in return, which again, doesn't really upgrade their team right now. But I think based on how he was playing and his fit in this defense, it kind of made sense for both sides. What say you?
Yeah, I said it. I think you and I actually both mentioned this, but I know I've talked about this on here before where you look at these defensive schemes and whether you run a 4-3 or a 3-4 has mattered less than it ever has because of how fluid these defenses are, how much defenses stay in their nickel package and they don't necessarily stay in base. But what it does affect is the personnel that you have. And sometimes those personnel guys just don't fit that from a 3-4, like Preston Smith being an outside backer in a 3-4, that doesn't necessarily translate to being a 4-3 D end. It can. That's definitely within a possibility, but I do think that his build and his skill set, because he was in a 3-4 for so long too, is just kind of more matched for that scheme. And yes, he goes to Pittsburgh, again, a place that you can assimilate right into, especially defensively. I'm happy for him because he was not getting utilized correctly for Green Bay and wasn't really a factor like we've seen in previous years between him and Rashawn Gary. That just hasn't materialized this season so far. So I was happy for Preston.
Happy for Preston. I think it makes sense for Pittsburgh. They get another player that fits that defense very well, should continue helping them. And they just always have really good linebackers. And Herbig is a little bit beat up right now. So again, it gives them another option. We know TJ Watt can miss a game here or there. So it just gives them a little bit of insurance as they kind of make that push towards the playoffs. Like it for Pittsburgh. Like it for Green Bay. I think it gives LVN, Enagbare, Brenton Cox, Aaron Mosby some more opportunities to play. And I think those young guys need to play, which is what we've seen over the last couple of seasons, is the more playing time they get, usually the better that they get. And this defensive front needs to get more pressure, needs to get more sacks, and hopefully a little bit more playing time for some of those younger players. By the end of the year, they can be assimilated even better into this defense and playing a better brand of football than they have been so far this season.
Yep. I agree. Just across the board. And Green Bay is just a place that does want to develop its players and build so much of their team through the draft. So this is kind of a win-win.
Also, Brian Gutekunst, once you turn 30, he's like, I'm kind of good. We're going to go in a younger direction.
He's like the Leo DiCaprio of the NFL. Like
the Leonardo DiCaprio of the NFL.
With a slightly higher age threshold.
Yes, in a slightly different way, but yes, very, very much so. All right, on that note, let's talk about NFC North awards. We're basically midway through the regular season. Green Bay is on their bye this week, so it's kind of been a fun week to have a retrospective of what's happened through the first half of this season, but figure we could look at it from an NFC North lens. So we'll go through most of the awards. We won't go over assistant coach or some of the, comeback player of the year, but we'll go over the main ones. So we're going to start with MVP. I think I know where both of us are going to lean in this one, but your MVP in the NFC North for the first half of the season.
Considering I think he's an MVP candidate league-wide, it's got to be Jared Goff. Yeah. Like he's on this incredible tear of efficiency. And I mean, he's being helped out, sure, by the team around him, but there really isn't anybody that's not, when you talk about that MVP conversation, other than Josh Allen, I suppose. He's probably doing the most with the least. But Jared Goff is just, I mean, he's got a 30 pass streak with Amon-Ra St. Brown right now. Like he's so incredible. He's taking care of the football and this team is scoring at will. Everything is working and it starts with Jared Goff. And he really has become such a well-rounded player and such an intuitive and highly intelligent player. He's making good decisions. Him and Ben Johnson clearly have a really good relationship on the field. And it's to the point where he is being able to diagnose things like a Brian Flores defense and pick it apart and make the right decisions when it comes to looking at different things that defenses are trying to do against them. And that's not something, we've talked about this before, where we've really necessarily in the beginning of Jared Goff's career associated with him. There was a lot of kind of miscues and is he making the right decisions? Is he relying too much just on his arm and his talent and all that other stuff? Now you've kind of seen him round into form within this Detroit offense, and there isn't anything that he does poorly. And you see, even when there is pressure on him, yes, you can affect him a little bit more. That's what Minnesota was able to do a little bit. But at the same time, it's what Tampa was able to do in their only loss. But at the same time, you do see Jared Goff becoming more and more resilient to that pressure, I think, as the season goes on. So it's got to be Jared Goff for me.
I have a pop quiz for you. PFF has 50 graded quarterbacks so far this season. Where does Jared Goff land on that list of 50 per PFF?
Ooh, I feel like I've looked at this recently. So this is I do a show with PFF. So this is really put my spot. Is he fourth?
He's 24th. He is 24th on their list of quarterbacks so far this year, which is really crazy. But Derek Carr is sixth, so I was very surprised by that as well. So I know it's you know, PFF. I love PFF. I think they do a phenomenal job. But every once in a while, you get one of these things that just like doesn't feel right. But I am with you, regardless. To me, he is the number one player so far in the NFC North and is very arguably MVP candidate for the overall MVP in the league so far, at least through the first half. I do think the offense is perfectly tailored to him, as we talked about last week, kind of going into that game. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 30 consecutive catches when thrown his way is just absolutely absurd. Obviously, Laporta is a weapon. Those running backs are weapons. The offensive line and Penei Sewell. I know Fox Sports, or maybe it was on your Twitter. I know when I was looking at and prepping for the show, there's somebody who's making the argument that there needs to be some sort of award for Penei Sewell out there, and I'm kind of in agreement.
Yes. It's actually Dave Hellman, who also works for Fox Sports. I think I retweeted it, but this has been kind of his crusade since earlier, like actually for years. He thinks that the NFL should have awards like college does, where they're like, it's the best offensive line, like the Remington Trophy for the best center, like all of these, the Biletnikoff, all of these awards, then we should bring them into the NFL, name them after NFL legends that played those positions. And therefore it kind of skirts the offensive player of the year just being the best offensive player, where MVP is now a quarterback award. And then you don't leave room for people like Penei Sewell, who absolutely deserves some sort of league-wide recognition for everything that he is able to do. It's not as quantifiable, but it's, you cannot argue the impact that he has on these games and how well he is playing his position and how much that's affecting the rest of the offense in Detroit. I am wholeheartedly in favor of doing something like that, where at least you get each position gets its own nationally recognized award.
Hey everyone, as Green Bay gets set to head into their bye week, I always find the week without a game to be one of my favorite times to play Prize Picks. With Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, you can sign up and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive that $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Simply put, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off, which ones aren't, make your picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Patrick Mahomes against Denver, Russell Wilson against Washington, and CJ Stroud to bounce back huge against Detroit. The best part is there are a ton of options out there for you to choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game. Hey friends, most people don't tell you that one of the hardest parts of becoming an adult is trying to actually kickstart your credit. Young adults get set up with credit cards so early, and so many people immediately start to accumulate debt as they begin their college careers. I know that's exactly what happened to me. That is why I wish Kickoff was around when I was in credit trouble. I absolutely love Kickoff because of its simplicity and, most importantly, because of its results. Here's how simple it is. You make one-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows. And as far as those results, users with credit under 600 increase their credit by an average of 28 points in the first month. And what's even better, you can sign up in minutes from your phone and there's no credit check and you can cancel at any time. Kickoff is the number one credit building app out there and has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store. So join over 1 million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Build your credit fast with Kickoff. Get your first month for a dollar. That's 80% off the normal price when you go to getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's Kickoff without the C. Get kickoff.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only, subject to approval. Average impact of 28-point increase in first month based on Equifax Vantage Score 3.0. Changes for Kickoff premium customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, we both agree on that. I think there could easily be something like that. And there's no downside, right? Like anything the right. NFL can do to add like another like awards, you know, section to their, like, it just makes sense to do that. Like I said, there's no real negative way to do it. But we're in agreement. Jared Goff, MVP of the NFC North so far. All right. Offensive player of the year. I think this one's interesting. Who do you have here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, I think there's a little bit of fatigue surrounding him, but I still think it's Justin Jefferson. I mean, you look at what Sam Darnold has been able to do, and yes, that's Kevin O'Connell. Yes, that's the rest of the offense around them. Yes, that's the tandem of the two tackles and Brian O'Neill and Christian Darrisaw before Christian Darrisaw got hurt. But so much of it still is Justin Jefferson just getting himself open and being on the same page as his quarterback and still doing the work and the fundamentals and all of those wonderful things. And then having these circus catches, these contested catches, there is no covering Justin Jefferson. And Sam Darnold has now been the beneficiary of a guy that even if he is covered, you can still give him a shot because more often than not, Justin Jefferson is going to come down with that ball. So there's a lot more ways you can go with this award for sure. But given that Justin Jefferson is coming off an Offensive Player of the Year award, like he is still my Offensive Player of the Year in the NFC North.
He's mine as well. And here's the crazy part I was looking at. I was looking at this because we talked about last week of how I'm such a huge fan of Amon-Ra St. Brown. We just talked about the 30 consecutive receptions and how unbelievable he is. Amon-Ra St. Brown has 48 catches on the year. Justin Jefferson also has 48 catches on the year. That's where the comparison ends. Amon-Ra St. Brown, phenomenal. Again, I love him to death. 48 catches, 464 yards. Justin Jefferson with his 48 catches, 783 yards. Now, Amon-Ra St. Brown has 6 touchdowns. Jefferson has 5. When it comes to big plays, Amon-Ra St. Brown has 4. Jefferson has 15, leads the league with 15 big plays at receiver, 97.9 yards per game. And when it comes to first downs as well, Justin Jefferson has 33. Amon-Ra St. Brown has 30. So as much as I think Amon-Ra St. Brown is a superstar and a stud and is just unbelievable for that Lions team, you just compare it to Jefferson and it's not even remotely close. Like Jefferson is blowing that out of the water. So I'm in lockstep with you. I think it's Justin Jefferson still. I think he does phenomenal work within that offense and he elevates that offense in a way that nobody else really can.
Yeah, no, I agree. And he's been doing that, right? And it doesn't matter who his quarterback is. He's just the picture of consistency and the picture of just being elite. That's who he is. He's just the best receiver, I think, in the NFL.
And I think you hit it on the head too. It's like, it's so easy just to take him for granted just because you expect like the phenomenal every single week where he's doing everything amazingly. And it's just like, oh, ho-hum. Like we just expect this at this point, but he's out of his mind still. And to me, certainly offensive player of the year in the NFC North. Let's go defensive player of the year. Who did you have here? This is an interesting one.
Yeah. Well, I went a different place than I think these awards normally go league wide. And that's Xavier McKinney. I would love to see a safety get this award. League-wide, and I do think that Xavier McKinney is in that conversation. We actually had that conversation last week on the NFL on Fox Pod. I don't think there's, between the direct impact he's had on the Packers defense in general after just arriving there this season and having 6 interceptions on the year, but it also came at a time, and it was consistent at a time, where the Packers were getting almost no pressure in the beginning of the year. And that's gotten a little bit better, but you know, to your point earlier, there's still room for improvement. But this Packers defense was saved by the fact that they were getting takeaways, and they were getting takeaways because of Xavier McKinney, and he was directly responsible for so many of them, I believe half, or almost half at this point. So it's an incredible feat for one player in this team game to have such an incredible impact on an entire side of the ball and to make it so that that side of the ball is still reliable or more reliable than it has been over the last couple of years. And it literally was the addition of Xavier McKinney. I don't think you can argue that he has had the biggest impact on his side of the ball on his team, probably league wide. And then I would love to see this award be given to somebody that has just had so much of an impact.
I'm going to cheat a little bit, and I have a propensity to do this. That's everyone always gets mad at me for doing it, but I'm going to cheat anyway. I'm going to split it between Xavier McKinney, and I have to give Kirby Joseph some run as well here because they both have 6 picks. Kirby Joseph just came into Lambeau and not only had the pick in that game, but had the key pick 6 in that game. They both have, again, the 6 interceptions. McKinney has 1 more sack. McKinney has 1 more fumble recovery, but Kirby Joseph has that touchdown and was key in that win against Green Bay where they played against each other, right? So I'm going to split it. I think both of them are well-deserving. If you want to go with Xavier McKinney, and I certainly would have no issue with that direction whatsoever, but just to show that I am a equal opportunity NFC North, here, and I'm not just going all Packers all the time. I'm going to split this one between McKinney and Joseph, and I certainly think that Joseph is well-deserving here for what he has done. I think the one thing that would lead me towards McKinney a little bit more is McKinney has clearly been that 1A guy in Green Bay. Like, to your point, exactly all the things you mentioned, he's had to be it. Whereas Joseph, Brian Branch, his running mate, has been phenomenal next to him. And
they're the best tandem in the league.
Hutchinson at the, like, if you were to say who was the best player on Detroit for the first half of the season when everyone was healthy, like it was not Kirby Joseph. It was Aiden Hutchinson too. So I could definitely be swayed very easily in the McKinney way, but I'm going to throw Kirby Joseph some love as well.
Well, I mean, you're splitting hairs too, just because these are the 3 highest graded safeties in the league, by the way. Kirby Joseph is the highest graded safety, followed by Xavier McKinney, followed by Brian Branch. So this is just tremendous safety play in the NFC North and between these 2 teams. But yeah, I that's why I lean Xavier McKinney, is because he single-handedly has been able to do so much for his entire side of the ball. Whereas Kirby Joseph, phenomenal talent. He's so much fun. He's a hilarious follow on Twitter too, if you don't follow him there. But he also has the benefit of playing with the other best safety in the league that he could play with, which is Brian Branch. And the tandem of those 2, there's no arguing they're best in the league, but it's not as if Kirby Joseph is doing it all up by himself.
No, I think that's totally fair. We might talk about another one of those safeties in just a moment as well. But before we get there, I think one of the ones I'm most interested in your answer for is Offensive Rookie of the Year. I think this one's much more difficult. What did you have for this one?
I actually went Roma Dunze. I wanted to give the Bears a little bit of love, which is probably not the place or the time to do it. But he had his second 100-yard game, and he has clearly started to develop this rapport with Caleb Williams, who I think we were all hoping would be the offensive player of the year league-wide. Again, I think Jaden Daniels has pretty much locked that up halfway through the season, barring something catastrophic down the second half. But I do think that Roma Dunze has been really wonderful for this Bears team and for Caleb Williams in particular. Like, even when things aren't going well, Caleb seems to be able to find Rome. And he was the first one that Caleb popped off with really in the beginning of the year. And now we're kind of seeing him cycle through. But Roma Dunze, and he's also just like, and this isn't going to show up on a stat sheet, but he's a more than willing blocker, which is something that's actually really important in Shane Waldron's scheme, is having receivers be blockers, which, you know, also is kind of like a mental thing with receivers who are used to getting the ball. That can lead to some, you know, tension in the locker room, or why am I not getting the targets I need to, and yada yada yada. Rome doesn't seem, I mean, he hasn't outwardly said anything, and that's not something Bears players have been afraid of doing as of late. So he's got a really good attitude about everything, and he is a good blocker. He factors into that part of the scheme very, very well, and then is also becoming kind of Caleb's go-to guy, which you want to see when they're on the same timeline. They're both, you know, they're both taken in the same draft, both taken in the first round, so they will be together for 4 or 5 years at this point, barring anything, again, crazy. I think it's Roma Dunze.
Yeah, we actually have the same person here again. I think it's interesting because I know. So Detroit has no offensive rookies of note. Minnesota's offensive rookie of note is out for the year in JJ McCarthy, and probably once he got on the field with the way Sam Darnold is playing anyway. You go to Green Bay, and it, like, Jordan Morgan, but he's got his first start last week, which was fine. And then it's rotated in at right guard, but it's not like he's making this massive impact along the offensive line. And then you get to Chicago, and they have 2, which is Caleb Williams, who has had an up and down season. He's done some really good things. He's done some not so great things. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a bit of a struggle, especially for that offense as of late. And then Adunze, who, to your point, has started to, I think, pick it up and is also doing so with a offense that hasn't exactly been the most functioning, consistent offense in the league as well. The one other one that I did think about, and this is also me cheating entirely, when you watch the All-22 and when you look at, they break it down in the offensive tape and the defensive tape. On the offensive tape, technically, the punting game is on the offensive
tape. That's true. That's true.
So I could make an argument for
Torrey Taylor.
Torrey Taylor of the Chicago Bears. I almost went in that direction, but I'll stick with Roma Dunze and stick with your answer there.
Yeah, no, I love Torrey Taylor. And he does factor into that so heavily for the Chicago Bears, the way that he is able to flip the field and just the consistency, too, that you can just rely on him being able to pin opponents, you know, deep within their own territory or kind of just put that ball exactly where he wants it to go, which is becoming ever more important. So I love Torrey Taylor, too. So they made me eat my words when I talked about not drafting specialists. And I still don't think that that's what you should like live by. I still don't think that that's something that you should do all the time, or that should be part of your philosophy drafting wise. And I still think that the fourth round is just entirely like very, very rich for a punter, but I can't say that Torrey Taylor hasn't been worth it.
If you hit on it, you could theoretically get a decade long player for a fourth round pick. And regardless of the punter, you know, I wouldn't do it either. I think you would try to hit something with a little bit more upside at that point. But if they get a decade long, really great punter out of it, I don't think they're going to be too upset that they spent a fourth round pick on it. But those usually are the exceptions to the rule. And he has been very, very good so far. Let's go defensive rookie of the year. Who'd you have here?
I have Edgerrin Cooper. Because again, there just weren't that many defensive players even taken in the first round at all league wide. And so then if you kind of like hone this all in, you look at Edgerrin Cooper taken in the second round, and he as of late has come on beautifully for Green Bay. We just talked about him last week. So I think that that's kind of a no brainer. I don't know if you have the same.
I did not. I had a Green Bay Packer, but I had Evan Williams. I went Evan Williams.
Was actually the other one I was thinking of,
too. And I was thinking of Edgerrin Cooper as the other one. So we're splitting hairs here. But I think Evan Williams and his consistency on defense, I wish he would have been able to play against Detroit. I wish he would have started the season a little bit earlier. It was kind of blurred to begin with. So those first couple of weeks were a little bit of a wash, where you're looking at the first half and it's more of like four or five games for Evan Williams in a full nine game slate. But also Edgerrin Cooper took some time to ramp up as well. I'm good with either. I will not disagree with anyone that wants to put Edgerrin Cooper on that list, but I would just give it slightly to Evan Williams just for a little bit more consistency than Edgerrin Cooper. But both have been able to make plays, and Edgerrin Cooper has been able to, I think, make those plays at a little bit of a higher level. So no disagreement from me there either way. And then the another tough one is Coach of the Year. So who did you have on this one?
I really do think that Coach of the Year is coming out of this division. So there is a lot of competition between Kevin O'Connell, Matt LaFleur, and even Dan Campbell at this point, who has just so forcefully been like that dude and just has been so incredibly like personable and wonderful. And you can see the culture that he's built in Detroit, and that's why that they are just rolling. But I do think it really does come down to either Kevin O'Connell or Matt LaFleur. And I think that you can make a really strong case for both of these guys between what Matt LaFleur was able to do with Malik Willis in and losing Jordan Love and really keep this team rolling and adjusting an offense sometimes mid game to fit that quarterback skill set. I cannot stress how hard that is to do, but I do think I'm going to end up going with Kevin O'Connell. And it's just because of the fact that not only Sam Darnold, but the scheme in general in Minnesota is so adaptable, and he really does kind of adjust with his players. And you see, like, I'm very interested, and we kind of got a glimpse of it this last game, but I'm very interested to see how TJ Hockenson then adds to the dynamic of this offense and how that materializes as the year goes on with him back in the lineup, because I do think that that changes things. And Kevin O'Connell is the type to be able to work that in and then do some different things, and which means better matchups for the guys that are out there. And I really can't overstate how much he has probably saved Sam Darnold's career, whether or not he stays with the Minnesota Vikings. I do think that this change and this development isn't fleeting for Sam Darnold. I think it was just, he needed the right situation. He needed to be coached the right way. He needed to understand what he was looking at and how to operate within that. And that's something that Kevin O'Connell has done so beautifully with him. And I'm so happy for Sam Darnold. We're seeing more than ever that some of these guys just need the right situation, and then their career trajectory completely changes. And I really do think that Kevin O'Connell did that for Sam Darnold.
you will get no arguments out of me. I think O'Connell's done a phenomenal job. I am going to go with Dan Campbell on this one. I think sometimes we have a propensity of like, just because we expected the team to be good and then they're good, like we're just like, oh, that doesn't matter. Like they were already expected to be this good. I just think he outcoached the two other guys that we talked, like Matt LaFleur and Kevin O'Connell, like they won those games. And to me, that's what just puts him ahead for the first half of the season. I think the team is playing his style of football. I think his stamp is all over this team. A lot of credit, of course, to Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn. I think he's got the best maybe coordinator duo in the NFL, but he brings everything together. And I think he is the engine that makes that entire Detroit Lions team go. So I'm going to go with Dan Campbell. I will have no disagreements at all with Kevin O'Connell. And I would certainly hear an argument for Matt LaFleur as well. And I'm 1,000,000% in lockstep that I think it comes out of this division at the end of the year, one way or the other. And it is probably the best coached division in the NFL, although Matt Eberflus has a little bit of work to do right now on the bottom
end. Sure does. Yeah, it doesn't help that he is being compared around the division to three, again, of the best coaches in the league. But at the same time, I mean, there has been, especially as of late, I've been a big defender of Matt Eberflus for a while now, and it's only over the last 3 or 4 weeks where I've been like, there are things that I refuse now to do the mental gymnastics to rationalize. And some things where, you know, in your third season as an NFL head coach, I just can't excuse. So there, we're going to see how things develop in Chicago. But yeah, that's, it doesn't help that he's in the division with three of the best coaches in the league.
No, it does not. But yeah, either way, those top three, very, very good. And it should be interesting to see how they all finish the year to see which one maybe does come out on top of that list league-wide. All right, let's take a quick look back at week 9. Three games, Lions really handled the Packers pretty easily. They get that big win in Lambeau Field. I think cement themselves as probably the best team in the league so far, at least for the first half of the season. Bears lose big to the Arizona Cardinals, and then the Vikings beat the Colts in a mostly nondescript game. I'll let you go in any direction that you want. What was your big takeaway from week 9?
Yeah, I was really preparing for a classic up at Lambeau. I mean, it was raining, and like, even I talked to some of the coaches over in Detroit, and they were like, they were so pumped. They were so hyped for this game because they just knew it was like that. It was exactly the type of football that they want to be playing. I think if they could play the Packers every single week, they would do it. And I think you would get a different result every single time. I mean, the Packers really, the story of that game was them shooting themselves in the foot. And that was really, that sucked to see because I really wanted this back and forth battle, whether or not that meant a ton of points or a defensive kind of bruising physical football game. I thought we were going to get something like that. And we quite frankly didn't. And those games are going to happen. I'm not drawing any sweeping conclusions, especially when Jordan Love, for as much as he insists that he's fine and not hurt, clearly the groin was bothering him. I mean, there's no point in really saying like that. I couldn't believe he came out and said like, no, I'm fine. I'm like, clearly you're not fine, and it's okay to not be fine.
You just didn't want to make excuses, I think. But yeah, I totally agree. No. He was not fine.
I know, and I get that. And I would rather my quarterback be like that than the alternative. But yeah, I mean, outside of that, like you said, the Minnesota game was like pretty routine. You knew Minnesota was going to pull away with that, and they did. And then with the Bears, it's disheartening to see that it looks like they're back to square one in the beginning of the season after their bye, which usually is not the case. I mean, you use the bye to adjust some things, sure, and you shore some stuff up and you figure out what's working and what's not. You spend the entire time self-scouting. And what that did, it just seems like either they put too much back onto the offense, too many changes, and now it just seems like Caleb Williams is paralyzed when he's trying to figure out what he's supposed to do. He was not in rhythm at all during that Arizona game. They couldn't effectively run the football in that Arizona game. It just, nothing was working. And at the same time, the defense faltered for the first time, I think, all season, where you really saw that they weren't able to keep it close. And it was that play before the first half or before halftime, that 53-yard run by DeMercado. And you're just like, I get that you called a pass defense, but there is still no reason that any team should score on that play. And it was so incredibly demoralizing to go into halftime down an extra touchdown versus what could have been 0 points. I mean, all the Cardinals were trying to get into field goal range. You just have to be smarter than that. And I just, in a game where the Bears needed such a bounce back win, to kind of get things going. I mean, things really haven't been much better around Halas Hall this week after losing that game in the fashion that they did. And this is, again, we talked about this after the Washington game. This can very much snowball on them. And I've seen more division and less resilience out of the Bears team than I think I ever have, which is including when they had a 3-win team or a 7-win team last year. They still had fight, and they were still, you could tell they were still together, and Matt Eberflus still had that locker room sitting at 500, which I think is a perfectly reasonable place to be right now. Yeah. I don't see that same resilience. I don't see that same togetherness. The vibes are just really off. They really need to go out, and I mean, gearing up for division play, I would love for them to be sitting at least a game over 500, because they are about to enter a gauntlet, and it's going to be really, really hard from here on out. So just get the win over the Patriots, Bears.
Yeah, that was my next thing, is like, as we kind of transition and just kind of a quick thought on each of these week 10 games, this feels like if there's a future in Chicago with Eberflus and Waldron and everything, it almost feels like this is a absolute must win against New England, because they have that really tough schedule the rest of the way. And, you know, you can always bounce back and get hot at the end and maybe show something, but man, it just doesn't feel like there's a great avenue for success. If you lose to New England, then have to go and play Green Bay the following week, and then it just gets harder from there. So this feels like a major game for the Bears. And then of course we've got Texans, Lions, and Vikings, Jaguars as well. Maybe just a quick thought on each of those.
Yeah, no, like I said, I feel like Patriots have been the get right game for everybody.
Yeah,
but that's the case for the Chicago Bears. And I do think, I mean, even if they lose that game, I think winning against the Packers at home can quell a lot of concern. But right now, I mean, the fact that the offense took a step back, Shane Waldron is unfortunately being held accountable for the guys that came before him. There is no more patience left for getting this offense going with all the talent it has on it. So I think that enters into it too. But if they beat the Patriots, and oh my God, if they're able to somehow pull it off against the Packers at home, I mean, that will really get things moving in the right direction for the Bears, but we'll see. I'm really looking forward to this Lions Texans game on Sunday Night Football. It's just, we haven't seen as much, I think, as we wanted to see from the Houston Texans, from CJ Stroud in particular. People forget though, it was not sunshine and rainbows at the beginning of last season either. Yep. They really did start to figure things out towards the end of the season in Houston. And I think a lot of people thought that was just going to kind of carry over and continue on that trajectory. And sometimes it doesn't necessarily work like that. But I do think that these teams match up really, really well. And I think that there's a lot that the Lions can do to exploit some of the weaknesses. And we'll see if Nico Collins comes back. I don't think he is.
Yeah.
I think that's right. They didn't open the window yet, so he would be a long shot to play. So that's going to factor into that game as well. And I mean, the Lions just, again, are seemingly winning at will. I do think that the Vikings-Jags, like, that's going to be another one where I don't see that going well for the Jags. Yeah. Especially, it's going to be fun. Like, Cam Robinson just came from the Jags, and so he's going to be playing the left side for the Minnesota Vikings line. And I have to think that, I mean, if he doesn't still have the physical playbook, he's still got it up here. So there are going to be ways that they can then exploit that. I know Brian Flores is in Cam Robinson's ear asking like what they can do to exploit. And in addition to their own film study. So that's going to be, I'm not giving the Jaguars much of a chance, and I'm sorry about that. Yeah, and then who did I miss right now?
No,
Green Bay, yeah.
Yeah, we got everything, so.
Yeah.
No, I'm intrigued. All three NFC North teams are favorites. So, you know, as a bye team, you never want to watch and see the rest of the division go 3-0. So hopefully from a Green Bay standpoint, that's not the case. So you have to just sit and watch on Sunday and see the rest of the division go undefeated, but could very much end that way with the matchups that we have, but maybe we'll get an upset here or there. You never quite know for sure, which is why this division is always the most fun. Carmen, you are the absolute best. Final thoughts before we get out of here, and where can we find all of your incredible work?
Yeah, just go ahead and go to Carmi V on Twitter, on Instagram. That's where I'm at. And yeah, we're gonna see. It's gonna be an interesting weekend. And now the Packers just kind of get to sit back and watch on Sunday and see their competition the rest of the way as division play kind of starts to ramp up starting next week.
Yeah, keeping an extra close eye on the Chicago Bears as they get set to face them in week 11, which should be a fun matchup and a very important one, like you mentioned, for Chicago. That's going to do it for us today, though. Again, you can find her on Twitter at Carmi V. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. We will see you all very soon. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.